Freedom seems important as far as a Bible topic for a lot of reasons. Today, as you think about 9/11, a lot of thoughts are going through the minds of people. Maybe one of the thoughts, at least a thought that I've seen on the minds of some, is freedom. We're glad that we're free, even though sometimes that's challenged by various people. When you look at the Bible, though, and I think we'll see this demonstrated pretty well tonight, freedom is an idea that you can see expressed throughout Scripture. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody try to teach the Bible from the standpoint of freedom, but it is a good one-word summation for a lot of what we find in Scripture, and we'll look at that a little later. But let's begin with point number one. What comes to our mind when we hear the word freedom? Hear it in prayers, we think about it, there are parades which celebrate freedom. What comes to mind? Freedom. I don't know who said that.
What did she say?
Victory.
All right, victory. There's been some type of overcoming, some type perhaps of battle, but I'm free from this. We think about, for example, a person has a mortgage burning ceremony. They're free from the debt of the house, or they're free from the debt of the car, or they're free from the debt of the boat. What else? Freedom.
Rights.
All right, we think about certain rights. If I'm free as a human being, that gives me certain rights.
Lack of restriction.
All right, that's probably going to be one of the biggest things. There will be a lack of restriction. Anything else? Freedom? Okay. Let's look at that second thought. In the Bible and in life, freedom is somehow associated with liberation from bondage. That ties into the point that Steve was making just a moment ago. That may not be true in every single case, but certainly in a number of instances, if we're talking about someone who has been freed from something, prior to that time, they were bound, they were restricted, they were somehow held captive. Person says, I'm free from this addiction, or I'm free from this pain. There were so many things when I was in pain I couldn't do, but now that I've had the surgery, or now that I'm taking this pill, I'm free from those restrictions. Let's start with the Old Testament. Let's go back to the book of Exodus, chapter 2, verses 23 and 24. Obviously, as we were looking at last Sunday, trying to give an overview of the Old Testament, when you think about Genesis, that sort of tells us how everything gets started. Read about the beginning, and you have these 70 or so special people by the time you get to the end of the book, and they head down to the area of Egypt. But by the time we get into Exodus chapter 2, 23 and 24, we start coming across or encountering the idea of bondage. Who's there? Exodus 2, 23 and 24, and wants to read for us. Betty?
And it came to pass in the course of those many days that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage. And they cried, and their cry came unto God by reason of the bondage. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob.
Okay, one of the key words there, as you think about bondage, did you hear it? What was the first key word? They sighed. Why do people sigh? I'm so happy. Oh. That's not why they sigh. Why do they sigh? They're burdened down, they're overcome, they feel like they're oppressed in some way. I'm oppressed by this news, I am burdened by this pain, this is not a good thing. That's word number one. What else do we see? They're not only sighing, but they're also crying, pleading with God. We're in bondage. We don't like this state. This is not a good thing. And then from Exodus 2, 23 and 24, what's the next thing? They sigh, they cry, and they groan. This bondage was oppressive. It was really, really bad. Well, as we look at the story in the Old Testament, we know that Israel was finally delivered from the bondage. And that takes us to a later time in biblical history. We want to pick this information up from the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 8. Dolores has it.
Just 8.
Deuteronomy 7, verse 8. Uh-huh. Hand as far as deliverance from bondage. All right. If you're in bondage by Egypt, a very powerful nation in that day and time, and you're going to be freed, it's not going to be some, you know, local Yahoo that shows up with a few people and says, well, we're here to try to get you home. No, God delivered his people in a strong and a very mighty way. Well, if you have the people in bondage, Exodus 2, God uses this great power to get them out. Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 8. The logical question then is what? If I free you from a debt that you couldn't pay, a burden that you could not bear or overcome by yourself, I do that for you. What might be true after I do that for you? All right, there might be some responsibility, there might be some obligation. That's a natural question to ask. Let's see what the text says, Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 9.
Know that Yahweh your God is God, the faithful God, who keeps his gracious covenant, loyalty for 1,000 generations with those who love him and keep his commands.
All right, who's going to be your God? I am. I delivered you. You have an obligation to serve me. That, of course, was for Israel. But remember Romans 15 and verse 4, we're to learn from the Old Testament. If God has delivered us from any kind of bondage, we ought to be asking the question, we ought to be thinking about whether or not we have any obligations. That takes us to point E, 3E. How can the preceding answer be related to our day and time? And that's it. If God has done something great for us as far as bondage, we need to ask if we have any kind of responsibility. Anything that you want to add or ask before we look at subpoint F? Okay, let's take a look at that now. This is going to stay in the Deuteronomy book. Dolores, you're still there by chance? If you would, from chapter 13 and verse 5.
13:5?
Yeah.
That prophet or dreamer must be put to death because he has urged rebellion against the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the place of slavery, to turn you away from the way the Lord your God has commanded you to walk. You must purge the evil from you.
Okay, let's go back and rehash a couple minutes of the last Sunday's sermon. Book of Genesis. Why do we have it? Anybody remember? I know you had a long, hard day. Genesis. Why do we have the book? All right. It's a book of history. It's a book of beginning. It lays the foundation, really, for the entire Bible, those 70 special people. So as we get to the end of Genesis, we've got that family of Abraham. And then as we get to Exodus, what's Exodus about? Anybody recall? All right. I don't know who said that, but very good. Exodus is the going out. That is the departure from Egypt. So you have the family starting, Genesis. You've got them in bondage, Exodus. They leave. They start going out. And now God is leading them. So it's really important to tell them what? You need to be what kind of people, because I'm what kind of God? You need to be a? Or? Starts with H and ends with Y.
Holy.
You need to be a holy people. So Leviticus is that manual on holiness. And then Numbers, they had some problems. You get into the wilderness wanderings. And then this is where I'm leading up to. Deuteronomy. What's the book of Deuteronomy about? Very good. It is Moses' farewell. It is the second giving of the law. So it goes back and recaps some stuff. Are you still there, Dolores? Deuteronomy chapter 13 and verse 5. All right, read that again, bearing that in mind, that this is the second giving. This is the repetition of the law. This is Moses telling these people, I'm about ready to die. These are some of the things that you need to remember. What do you need to recall? Okay, in the middle of that verse, towards the end, what did God say? I want you to remember what? You remember I brought you out. You were in bondage. You were slaves. You were oppressed. Remember that sighing, that crying, that groaning from Exodus chapter 2? God says, I took you away from all that. Wasn't there? Yeah, it was Charlie's Angels. Anybody ever watch that show growing up? You remember the girls? What's the expression? I took them away from all that. Remember that from Charlie's Angels? They were doing this, that, and the other thing. I took them away from all that. Well, God took us away from some things that were really bad. And God says, now you have some obligations to me, just as those ladies had some obligations to Charlie. All right, point G. This is multiple choice, five options. It's unwise, or it's okay, or it's good, or it's important, or it is essential. To also remember, if God has delivered us from some type of bondage, it is essential or just, well, not really necessary to recall that.
Essential.
It is essential. And that'll help us. That'll spur us on to faithfulness, if we will recall that. Dolores, you still back in Deuteronomy? Let's take one more time of assistance from you, if you would. Deuteronomy chapter 18, or 28 and verse 15, and then we'll move you down to the end of the chapter. Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 68. Let's see, first of all, from Deuteronomy 28, 15, if in this section we're talking about the blessings or the cursings that God promised for Israel.
If you do not obey the Lord your God by carefully following all his commands and statutes I'm giving you today, all these curses will come and overtake you.
All right, that's sort of the subheading to the section. So what do we know that we're reading about in the verses that follow? God says, good things or bad things? They're going to be the bad things. These are going to be bad things if you don't do my will. Let's move down now to that last verse, Deuteronomy 28, verse 68.
Oh, 68. That was 16 if you needed it.
Okay. We'll save that one for next class. How about that? It's a long ways down there.
My eye surgery is Monday.
There's a lot in the verse, so as she
listens,
as she reads it, listen carefully for the key point.
The Lord will take you back in ships to Egypt by a route that I said you would never see again. There, you will sell yourself to your enemies as male and female slaves, but no one will buy you.
Now think about that. God lists a bunch of curses in Deuteronomy chapter 28, and all of them were bad. You didn't want to have any of these things happen to you. But as he gets down to the end, once again, he's told his people through Moses, remember that I brought you out of Egypt. If you're not willing to do that, and by implication you're not willing to obey me, God said, I'm going to get you together, and you're going to get a free trip. You're going to get to see the sea. I'm going to put you on a boat. And where are you going to go? You're going to go back to that place of bondage. And who are you going to be enslaved by? Your enemies. And you know, you're going to be how despised? Nobody will even buy you. Can you imagine that? Wouldn't even want them for slaves. Absolute pathetic as far as what was pathetic consequences as far as what was going to happen to them. So God has enslaved people. He's brought people out of bondage today. And when we start thinking about bondage, the Old Testament has a lot to say about it. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down a little further? Okay, when we think about the early bondage experienced by Israel, look at that in terms of God. When you start looking at what God has done, we sometimes do things and maybe it's a mindless act, or maybe we do something and a person says, well, why'd you do that? Well, I don't know. I mean, we've got a neighbor that has put some things up on the garage door, and Teresa and I both just think that they're weird. I'm not quite sure why they did that. If they got them at a sale and thought, what are we going to do with them? Let's just plaster them on the garage door. They're not really all that attractive, but maybe they find them to be attractive. But you see people do things and you wonder sometimes, what's the purpose? And if you ask them, they may not have a real good reason. Anytime, though, in the Bible you read about God doing something, he always has a purpose for it. Oftentimes you'll find that God not only has a purpose for it, but he sometimes has a twofold purpose, maybe even a threefold purpose or more. That stuff about bondage, he had a purpose for that. It was his people were bad. That was a punishment for them. But there was a greater purpose. Anybody know what the greater purpose was? Well, there was that. But anything even beyond that? It was designed to point forward ultimately to the New Testament and say, guess what, guys? There is also spiritual bondage. It's worse. It was bad as far as the crying and the groaning and the sighing. That was all terrible. But the spiritual bondage is far worse. It will send you to a place that is an eternal hell. And just as God delivered Israel, God also offers this spiritual bondage. If you have in your head all the Old Testament examples of bondage, and I don't mean literally every one, but I mean what we've talked about with Israel, what we're going to see from the book of Judges, and I didn't put down every reference, every single reference from the book of Judges. I could have given probably at least five or six more, but this is a pretty good sampling. You have to get in your head that idea of bondage, 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 bondage. And then when John the Baptist shows up, what's he preaching? Repentance. Why? Because you people are in bondage. Well, the folks hear that, the Jews think that, and what are they thinking initially? Oh, well, yeah, we're in bondage to who? The Romans. And John says, no, that's not the problem. Jesus shows up, he says, that's not the problem. I'm not that kind of deliverer. I did come to redeem you from bondage, but it is the spiritual bondage of sin. And that was really eye-opening for some people. Who wants to be our Judges reader? If you don't have to read them all, maybe we'll just ask you to read half. All or half? All right, let's start with Judges 2, 11 through 14.
The children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam, and they forsook the Lord God of their fathers, which brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods, of the gods of the people that were round about them, and bound themselves unto them, and provoked the Lord to anger. And they forsook the Lord and served Baal and Ashtaroth. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he delivered them into the hands of spoilers that spoiled them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand before their enemies.
Okay, I'm going to have you read Judges 3 next, but listen to all the things that Gary just read about. Number one, God's people were evil. Remember back there in Deuteronomy chapter 28, as far as the blessings and the cursings, God said, if you're going to go down that road of evil, he said, I will send you back into bondage. Well, he wasn't kidding. In this case, it was not necessarily Egypt, as we look at the book of Judges, but he did use a number of people. He said, you followed idols. He said, you bowed down to them. You've forsaken me. And he said, that was so bad. He said, my anger is hot. Well, let's take that and apply that to America. We've never been a quote-unquote Christian nation in the sense of a lot of people truly following what the Bible describes. I mean, some have been very religious. Some have taken a number of Christian principles and applied them to live pretty well moral lives. But when you look at what's happened in our nation, you have to begin to wonder if you have at least forsaken by many of those general Christian principles and how long God will say America can stay free. You can only poke him in the eye for so long and so hard, and God finally says enough. And Israel is a permanent example of that. All right, Gary, if you will, let's look at Judges chapter 3, verses 7 and 8.
Forgot the Lord their God, and served Balaam and the groves. Therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of Chushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And the children of Israel served Chushan-Rishathaim 8 years.
Thank you. Three or four important points there. Number one, God's people were again evil. But what was that second key word that he read? They were not only evil, what did they do? They
forgot
God. Remember back there in Deuteronomy chapter 28, what did Moses say? I am telling you, he said, I don't have much faith that you're going to, remember, you're going to foul things up. But he said, you are going to go and involve yourself in wickedness again, and one of the punishments that you're going to suffer is bondage. Can you see the value of that as we think about American society? You have people, a generation arises, maybe they fight for freedom. And the next generation, they're reminded of the sacrifices of the previous generation, and they say, we want to hold on to that freedom. But as the generations continue to move forward, what happens? It's forgotten. And when you forget, you're in danger of losing that freedom. That very well could happen to our country at some point.
Am I understanding that you're equating the United States with Israel?
Just in principle. The principle here is that if you are free and you forget that freedom, you can lose it.
But in Israel, it wasn't an individual. It was a land, it was a nation of Israel.
Yeah.
As a whole.
It's sure.
God's chosen people. Aren't we all hold to help to our standards ourselves, not as a nation? Individually, we're beholden to God for what he did for us.
Absolutely, spiritually. And we're going to deal with the spiritual part. I just want to stay focused on the physical part for a little bit. Nations that are free can lose it.
The reason I ask that, you know, some religious Christian music stations, there's one song that says that's going to happen. It's going to be like Israel. We're going down the path of sin as a nation, and we're going to be lost like Israel was. And I have trouble with that.
Do you remember some of the other words?
No, I don't.
Do we sing it here?
You know, in fact, I turned it off. I don't like the sound. I don't like
it. Do we sing it here?
Huh?
Do we sing
no,
it here?
No.
Oh, okay. Well,
no,
all right. Well, that makes it a little easier for me to identify then. I can't, Don, as I, and maybe one of our song leaders can better identify with that, but right now I don't ever remember singing that particular song. But not all songs, obviously, convey biblical truth, even if you give them some poetic license. Okay. But the point that I want to make is that nations can lose that freedom if they become forgetful of it. Was there another hand there? Okay, let's go back and see what else we have. Gary, let's move over to chapter 6 and verse 1.
And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years.
Okay, back there in Judges chapter 3, anybody remember how many years it was?
Eight.
Now how many years are we reading about?
Seven.
So it's not 40 or 50 years, it's not 100 years, but it's still a long time to lose freedom. And then finally, Gary, chapter 10, verses 7 and 8.
And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the children of Ammon. And that year they vexed and oppressed the children of Israel 18 years, all the children of Israel that were on the other side Jordan in the land of the Amorites, which is in Gilead.
Okay, what do we know about the Philistines, nice guys or not so nice? They were the guys who did what to Samson? All right, they put his eyes out. Now, he certainly was one of their worst enemies, but still, they were very brutal, and you see that hinted here as far as the words vex and oppress. How many years did the Philistines have a chance to hold Israel in bondage? 18, so that's certainly more than the previous two references. As I said, Judges, it's all about that. God's people are bad, they're wicked, they're evil, engage in idolatry. God delivers them into bondage. They cry out for help. The judges come, and they're not people who are in the legal system per se, but they were really military deliverers. So you have all of this going on. God is using this oppression to bring people back to him, and then it's this cycle, and then you finally get over to 2 Kings, and this is what we talked about a little bit last Sunday as far as the Old Testament history. Remember, you start out, the people of Israel finally say to God, we want a king. All right, well, they rejected God as your king, so God says, you want a king? I'm going to give you one. Who was it?
Saul.
Saul reigns for how many years?
40.
Is the kingdom united or divided under Saul?
United.
Saul, he reigns his 40 years. Who comes to the throne next?
David
reigns for 40 years. Is the king united or divided?
United.
And then who reigns next?
Solomon.
For how long?
40
years. Kingdom united or divided? It's
united.
And then after Solomon, what happens with the kingdom? There's this split. You have northern Israel and you have southern Israel. In 2 Kings chapter 17, you find that Assyria, 722 BC, about 700 years before Christ came into the world, Assyria shows up and takes them captive. So that's almost the culmination of this great history. As I say, it's freedom and it's bondage. And you can follow that from really the end of Genesis and first part of Exodus all the way through. And God's people were dealt with by prophets as well. Point eight, there are more than 250 references to slaves and slavery in the Bible. I was surprised to find out that there are that many. I didn't realize that it was quite that high. But certainly there are a number of them. As I said, point number nine, the Old Testament information about slavery sets the stage for the New Testament. If you were a Jew, you knew your history. If you grew up some years back in America, you probably knew American history. You'd studied it. I mean, you knew about the Revolutionary War and, you know, all the things involved in the beginning of this country, the British and all that stuff. But today, you wonder, at least in some school systems, just how much the kids know about how our nation was founded. If you were a Jew, though, you were taught all that stuff. And you knew that God had sent his people into bondage. And then you have this preacher, John the Baptist, Jesus, and then finally some Christians showing up, and they're talking about sin. But as we look at the New Testament, they don't just talk about sin. They say sin does what to you? Sin puts you in bondage. If you were a Jew and you heard that word bondage, sometimes there are words which just cause a person's brain to kind of light up. I mean, that's the word that is the attention-getting word for us. One of them might be free. If you say free in American society, you're probably going to have some people, they're going to look and say, oh, free. It's probably junk, but I still want to know. You know, little appliance for the kitchen drawer. I probably already got 10 of them, but it's free. I'll go and get one more. For the Jews, though, it was the idea of bondage. Now, think about that and consider it in terms of point 10a. Do we have some people today who want to go back and be under some part of the Mosaical system? Yes. Where do we see that? How do we see that? All right, you find, with the, for example, the Seventh-day Adventists, they say we want to have the seventh day, that would be Sunday, first day of, or the first day of the week is Sunday, we want to have the seventh day, the Sabbath day, Saturday, and that's going to be our day. They're going to go back to the Old Testament for that. Where else do you see it? All right, there are some other religious groups. They want the priests, and they want the physical trappings of worship and so forth. Where else do you see it? Well, people today who want to go back and pull something from the Old Testament because they like that part of Moses' law. All right, there would be some who would say we need to teach the Ten Commandments today, and they're going to go back to Deuteronomy chapter 5, Exodus chapter 20, and say this is what you need to do to be a child of God. What else? All right, they're going to go back and look at some of the dietary laws, especially relative to meat. You'll have the food laws. Anything else? What about the tithing? What about the instrument of music? Let's see what the Bible has to say, specifically the New Testament, about the Old Testament. Let's start with the book of Acts. We've got two verses here from Acts chapter 15. The first is Acts 15:5. The second is Acts chapter 15 and verse 10, especially the latter part of that 10th verse. Acts 15:5. Brian, are you ready to go? Thank you.
But there rose up certain of the sect of the Pharisees, which believed, saying that it was needful to circumcise them and command them to keep the law of Moses.
Okay, now this verse is where we left off in our Sunday morning class. We're currently going through Acts, and we're in Acts chapter 15. We're ready for Acts chapter 15 and verse 6. When we do that again, that'll be a week from Sunday. We want to talk about false teachers this coming Sunday. But there are these Pharisees. Apparently they had come to accept Christ as the Son of God. Apparently they were baptized. But they also, as far as their version of Christianity, they thought, we need to, at least with the Gentiles, impose on them the law of Moses, and that includes circumcision. Well, let's see what Peter had to say about that. Brian, if you will, Acts 15 and verse 10.
Now, therefore, why tempt ye God to put a yoke upon the neck of the disciples, which neither our fathers nor we were able to bear?
How's the law of Moses described? He says it is a yoke. Anybody ever see oxen out there yoked in the field working together? How comfortable do the oxen look? It doesn't look like it's a very pleasant experience. We don't want to have that yoke around our neck. Yet the Bible says when it comes to the law of Moses, what is it like? It is like a yoke. It's like
an unbearable yoke.
Yeah, it's like that choking, well, I mean, they're not being choked if you're an oxen, but you've got that restriction, to go back to the word that Steve used earlier. Why on earth would you want to go back and pull from a system, any part of the system that's described as a yoke? That makes no sense to me at all. Yet, as we gave as far as multiple illustrations a few minutes ago, that's what a lot of people do. We gave at least six different examples of why or how some people want to go back and grab some part of that. Well, Peter's not the only one in Acts chapter 15 who talks about the Old Testament being like a yoke. Let's see what Paul has to say about it. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 1. All right, Betty, to you.
For freedom be Christ set us free. Stand fast, therefore, and be not entangled in a yoke of bondage.
Okay, he said Jesus came, and what did the Lord come with? He came with a system of freedom. If you have found Christ, you found the New Testament, you become part of that. If you go back to the Old Testament, what are you doing? Yeah, you're going back to the state of slavery. Can you imagine if the Israelites had come out of Egypt and they said, boy, you know, we're out here in the wilderness, God's caring for us, and I know that they had some rough times, but when times were good, can you imagine them looking back at Egypt and saying, we sure like the slavery back there, sure like making bricks. Sure like to be beaten by the people who are watching over us. sure like not having our freedom to do what we wanted day by day? No! They wouldn't have thought that. They didn't think that. And yet, that's exactly, even though they don't realize it, that's exactly what people are doing when they have some understanding of the New Testament, but they want to go back and also follow some part of the Old Testament. Are you still in Galatians? If you will back up two chapters and see what we've got in Galatians 3 and verse 10, that'll help complete the thought.
For as many as are of the works of the law are under a curse, for it is written, cursed is everyone that continueth not in all things that are written in the book of the law to do them.
Let's make two points about that. Number one, Paul said, if you want to go back and be under the law, what kind of system is that going to be? What's going to be the consequence, the end result of that? You're going to be under a curse. Well, that's generally not what most people want when it comes to God. Why is that? Why did the law result in a curse for everybody who was under it? I had two answers. I'll start with you, Betty.
It just says that all things aren't written in the book of the law.
Okay.
They couldn't keep the law.
Yes. If you were going to be justified by the law, what'd you have to do? Keep it perfectly. You could not have one mistake. And Jesus, that's why Jesus was able to come and he fulfilled the law. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 17. He lived under the law. He lived perfectly under the law. He fulfilled it in every possible respect. The Jews that lived under the law, every single one of them sinned. They've estimated that there were 613 different commandments for the Old Testament law. Now that's a bunch of rules to live by just one day or 2 days or 3 days. You imagine living your entire adult life. Every single day of your adult life, you're trying to follow those 613 laws. That's a bunch. They failed, and hence we're under the curse. Freedom did not come from Moses' law for the reasons that we gave, and now we introduce a new point. Freedom doesn't come from sin. Let that sink in for a second and what comes to mind. Freedom does not come from sin. Anybody want to take a stab at the thought there? Freedom does not come from sin. Well, let's take a look and see what we have below it. Maybe that'll help us just a little bit. Do some think that a life absent or a life without God is true freedom? Sure. You find sometimes that attitude with marriage, don't you? Guy says, boy, I don't have no old lady at home telling me. He just fills in a blank. She's not going to tell me when to be home. She's not going to tell me what to wear. She's not going to tell me how much I can drink. She's not going to tell me how much I can spend in a car. She's not going to tell me how much a paycheck I can gamble away. I'm free.
Sin keeps us bound to something.
It does. Everybody is under subjection to someone and something. People, though, do have that idea as far as I'm free because, or a person says, well, you know, I'm not working. You know, I'm free to do this, that, and the other thing. That's not true in the sense that people generally like to think. Let's see what Jesus has to say about freedom. We'll pick up with two passages from him. Luke chapter 4 and verse 18. The second is going to come from John chapter 8. Luke 4 is our first reference. Luke 4, 18. Anybody have it and want to go? All right, Lois, thank you. Thank you. Let's think about two things here initially. Jesus comes along and he says, I'm preaching by what power? I'm preaching by the Spirit. We're working in harmony with one another. And he said, what am I preaching? I'm preaching the gospel. Now, we think about gospel as far as the death, the burial, the resurrection of Christ. That's certainly true, 1 Corinthians chapter 15. But here you have something else added. He said, the gospel I'm preaching, ultimately it included the death, burial, and resurrection, but that hadn't happened yet. So because he's back here, he says, this gospel I'm preaching, what's it about? It is the gospel of freedom. It's the gospel of release. It's the gospel for the person who's in captivity. Once again, think about who Jesus is talking to. He's talking to some Jews. If you were someone who had all your formative years heard about the Jews' history and all that stuff as far as bondage, and this guy shows up one day and says, I want to tell you about freedom. It's like that word free for us. We hear that word and all the bells start going off. We're thinking, oh, this is going to be an interesting sermon today. I wonder what he's talking about. Are we going to be delivered from the Romans? That probably would have been the first thing that would have been going through many minds. Jesus continues to advance that theme. It's veiled. It's just sort of hinted at early in the first part of his ministry, but he gets a little, I don't want to say bolder, but he gets a little more forthright, I guess we use that word, in places like John chapter 8, 31 and 32. Anybody there and ready to go? All right, Gary, to you.
Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, "If ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
Keep that place for just a minute, if you would. Can you imagine hearing that? There's this guy who comes along and says, "I want to talk about freedom." And he said, "How can you find freedom? You can achieve it through what?" Well, will you read that one more time?
"If you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
Whose word is it? He says, "My word." That had to be a shocking statement. This guy says, "You continue in my word, this truth, and that's going to free you." I imagine that got some attention. Then, if you will, Gary, let's move down four verses and see what we have in John chapter 8 and verse 36. He makes this statement that freedom is possible. It's freedom through this message that I'm preaching. And then he says, here's how full it is.
"If the Son, therefore, shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed."
Wow. What happens if you call the bank, you've got a mortgage on the house, and the person who at the other end says, "Oh, your mortgage is forgiven"? Really? Maybe it's April Fool's Day. Could that happen? Now, she's probably not going to keep a job, but it could happen. Just because somebody says on the other end of the line, "Your mortgage is forgiven," maybe that's true, maybe that's not. But how do you know the mortgage is forgiven?
Paperwork.
Yeah, they give you the little stamp which says "paid in full." And once that comes, you get the official documentation, you know that that debt has been fulfilled. You know that you have had that loan paid off. And that's sort of like what Jesus is saying here. It's not, well, maybe, maybe not. He says, if you will take my word, you'll follow it, you'll obey it. He says, you will be free, and free indeed. A marvelous, powerful statement. Well, Betty touched on something a little earlier, and this is where we're going to head and take our concluding comments from Romans chapter 6, and we'll also see what Peter has to say and then make some general observations under 19 A, B, and C. But let's go back to Romans chapter 6 and verse 16. Betty had mentioned earlier that people sometimes think that they're free when they're doing this, that, and the other thing. They're not bound by a god, at least in their minds. But let's see what Paul has to say. Romans 6, 16. Who's there and wants to go? All right, Steve.
"Do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness?"
Paul says there are two choices. You will be a slave, you will be a servant to someone. You can serve sin if that's your choice. And if you do that, you're in bondage. The other choice is you have this freedom. That freedom that comes through Christ that we just read about in John chapter 8, 31, 32, John chapter 8 and verse 36, it is true freedom, and you get to choose. Let's take a look at that next verse, Steve, Romans chapter 6 and verse 17.
"But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were
Now, you might be reading that verse on your own, and you read through the text, and you think, well, okay, that's good. Let's head on to the rest of the chapter and then into Romans 7, 8, 9, and 10. But after tonight's class, if you were reading that verse, you think you might read it a little differently? "But thanks be to God that whereas you were what? You were
slaves. Servants
or slaves to sin." Oh, yeah. We talked about that in Bible class. And then you read a couple more verses, and then what's he say? "You were slaves, you were servants to sin, but now you've been made free." You have a completely different perspective on the verse now because you're bearing in mind all that Old Testament history plus what Jesus had to say. Now, Paul is not the only apostle to deal with this topic. Peter did too. Let's see what we have over in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 16. Anybody want to be your assistant for that one? 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 16. All right, Don?
As free
Yes, not using liberty as a cloak or vice, but as bondservants of God.
What's Peter telling us? He says, you're free. That's the same message that Paul proclaims in Romans chapter 6, especially verse 17. But he says, you've been made free, so don't what? Don't do bad things. Can we see the application between that and our country? Are we free? I mean, we've got freedom of speech, right? But with that freedom of speech, what's sort of the asterisk after that?
You can use that freedom for bad purposes.
Yeah. When is...
You don't always use your freedom wisely.
Yes. When is freedom of speech not freedom of speech? Well, yeah. Well, that's a really good general answer.
Well, you said,
call
fire in here.
Right. Let's now make it specific. You caught the general part of it. You can't shout fire in a public place when there's no fire. That's not legal. What else? All right. There are going to be some things you have. I didn't see all the news on this, but there was a lady who was using her speech. She defrauded some people out of $1.6 million, and now she's headed to jail. I just caught the headline of that. But there was a lady who used her free speech to somehow deceive others. And that's really sad. That's unfortunate. But to use speech for evil, Peter says don't do that. Our laws say you're free. Don't do that. We have some other rights as well as far as freedoms. But if you abuse somehow or misuse those freedoms, then there's going to be a consequence for that. And God says also true in the spiritual realm. When we think about freedom of, in Christ, it offers a number of benefits. Let's take a look at Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 15, and then we'll kind of highlight these other two passages for us. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 15. Anybody there and want to take care of it for us? Don, you back there? Okay.
And release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage.
Anybody seen people afraid to die? Sometimes it's a person in an emergency. You think about, for example, an airplane that's going to come down, going back to 9/11. We weren't in the planes. But people being people, I'm pretty sure that whether they were in the buildings that day, whether they were on the planes that day, whether as the towers were falling in New York, they were fleeing, wondering if that was going to be the last day, people fear death. But for the Christian, what's the Bible say? Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 15. You may have been in bondage to that prior to becoming a Christian, but when it comes to death, what is it? It's just like stepping through a doorway. And God says, what's on the other side is so much better than you can imagine. It's nothing like what you're leaving. You're leaving the bad and you're coming into the good. That's great freedom. We have some other freedom. We've got the freedom from sin. That's ultimately the best freedom that anybody can have. There's the freedom from false religion. Remember, Jesus said, John chapter 8, you shall know what? You shall know the truth, and the truth is going to free you. Well, free us from a lot of things. Freedom to boldly approach God, Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 16. That's what the verse says. Through Christ. And if you have that system through Christ, why in heaven's name would you want to go back and somehow entangle yourself in that yoke of bondage, Galatians 3:10, that cannot justify? It makes no sense on earth. We're free to be spiritually equal with others. We have different roles. There's no doubt about that. But it's not like the Old Testament system where you've got the priest and he's especially close to God and you feel like you're the person who's out there on the outside. That has been taken away. Freedom in matters of conscience.